everyone. Today, I am here with Jennifer Adcock to talk about the price of coal. Jen, thanks so much for joining me. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and tell us about the price of coal?
Hi, yes. Thank you for having me. So I am Jen. Been an RPG designer for a few years now, mostly on small projects, freelancing on some other people's stuff. This is my first big project, which is really exciting. The Price of Coal is a card-based historical story game about a historical event in American history called the Battle of Blair Mountain, in which striking coal miners in West Virginia were attacked by the U.S. Army for striking for their workers' rights. And it's an event that I feel has been really underrepresented in education and in gaming spaces, in public spaces, in workers' rights spaces. So I'm really hoping to bring greater awareness about that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the historical event, and I would love to learn about it while playing a game. Like, what a great way to bring awareness. What first gave you the idea to make a game surrounding this event?
So it sort of came from two places that happened to converge at the same time. At Breakout Con a couple years ago, I heard some people playing Red Carnations on a Black Grave by Catherine Rahman. Wonderful game. And it really opened my eyes to some of the possibilities of what you could do with historical games. And at the same time around then, I read actually a book of poetry of all things. It wasn't even like a nonfiction textbook or anything. It was a book of poetry about the Battle of Blair Mountain. And I was just so captivated by it. And I was shocked that I'd never heard of it. And having those both happen around the same time was a big catalyst for me.
I love that. Yeah, I have not played Red Carnations on a Black Grave, but I heard an actual play of it. I'm pretty sure it was on She's a Super Geek, the podcast, and it has been on my list to play. So
if you get the chance, definitely do. It's a great time.
Yeah, I will. So was Red Carnations on a Black Grave? I know that kind of gave you the idea about a historical game, but is that game, like the feel of it or the mechanics, is it a direct inspiration of The Price of Coal?
I think a lot of it, we're actually pulling from the same games. Like I love to joke about games having lineages these days, right?
Yes.
Like you can see like who was influenced by what, which I think is very cool. There's definitely some influence there. There's some from games like Heaven's Collapse using the Protocol system, which is another sort of heavy historical game. Mm-hmm. And I actually took a lot of structural inspiration from For the Queen and A Quiet Year, because of it all being card-based and where you have all of these very leading questions, right? That was something that really inspired me with For the Queen, was the potential of just asking a question the right way and what answers that can lead you to.
Yeah, I love For the Queen. I actually played a hack of For the Queen while I was at Big Bad Con in 2019, called Reunion. And that was a really great game. So I played a hack of it before I got to play For the Queen. And then I played For the Queen on a live stream, and it was quickly one of my favorite games because you're right. The way you ask a question and the way someone answers that question based on what other players maybe have set up, like you could play that game 100 times. It's not going to be the same.
Exactly. And it's a potent framework. Like you've said, there's hacks of it now, where people are doing just so much innovative stuff with different settings and different thoughts and really just taking, you know, an element here, an element there, borrowing from a bunch of different things. You can really mix it into something completely different.
Yes, absolutely agree. Tell me a little bit about the mechanics of The Price of Coal.
Sure. So everyone in the game has two characters that they're playing, one of whom is a coal miner and one of whom is actually a family member of a coal miner, but not a miner themselves. That was super important to me to incorporate, actually based on a line from the aforementioned poetry book where she says, "It's the men who go down into the mines, but it's the women who carry it inside of us." which was, that one just hit me so hard. So that was something I really wanted to try to evoke. So in your scenes, it is scene-based role play. You draw a card with a question-based prompt on it, and you decide which of your two characters would be involved in resolving that problem. It is mostly about, this is a new problem in your community leading up to this horrid event. How do you take care of each other through this? How do you do the best that you can with the with what you've been dealt, to put it gently? And it's, I think that is really the heart of the game, right? Is that community care. Mm-hmm. This is not a game about winning the historical battle, because it is going to unfold in the game the same way it did in real life, and it is going to go poorly.
Right.
But it's about making the most of what you can until then.
That's interesting to have a role-playing game or a storytelling game where you know the ending, but you still play it anyway. That almost makes it more intriguing to me. I think those of us who play role-playing games often understand that it's so much about the experience and connecting with the other players, as well as telling a story together. So really the ending is not the goal, but even for a new role player, I think it's really intriguing to have that, I'm going to say boldness in the most positive way of like, I know how this game is going to end, but here's why you want to play it anyway. I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's something that we ended up finding really important to spell out up front, right?
Sure.
Because people are so not used to that. People would go into playtesting with the thought of, okay, well, I'm gonna get my rifle and we're gonna win this battle. And it's like, but are you?
Right.
No, you won't. So it's really interesting, I think. So because the game takes place over the course of a year, as the situation steadily gets worse in your community. And you can feel sort of the tension mounting, or at least I hope you can. That's my goal as the designer.
Right.
You can feel it mounting until you get to that point where there is no going back.
Is there heavy character creation or is it quick character creation? I'm interested in that piece.
We've really tried to trim it down, especially cognizant of the fact that like playing two characters can be a lot. So the characters are already made, characters that come with the game. They all come in their nice little set pairs. And so what you do instead is actually when you are randomly dealt your characters is building the relationships between them. Like on the card, it might say that, John is married to Sarah. But, you know, who in town are they friends with? Who do they talk to? Who do they rely on when things are hard? Who do they not trust? Those things that really change up each time you play.
So how many relationship questions are there? Like four or five?
So each character card has two different ones on it. And you just use pick two different characters and say, you know, oh, I think, you know, again, using John as an example, I think John relies on Eliza for such and such reason. Whereas if you had given John's character to another player, they would pick someone completely different, possibly, which is a lot of fun to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to like the card-based games where it's different every time, so the replayability is high. I see how that could be the case here too. Even if you play it again and you choose to play John and Sarah again, you might make different relationships and therefore your story and your gameplay is completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was something that was really important to me. after a very messy first play test, I will totally admit, I did get one question from someone. I was like, why would I play this again? If I, like, one, I've played the story and I know the end, but now I also know how we got to the end. So that was something that took a lot of reworking through playtesting.
Yeah, I think that the relationships was an excellent choice, because that will make replayability easy, I think, for most folks, and they'll want to replay it. Is there anything else that gives you more replayability other than the relationship questions?
So there are enough event cards that actually at the start of the game, you do remove some, just randomly, just to be like, okay, you know, we have six players, but eight event cards. We're going to take out two event cards for this season. Mm-hmm. So you could also totally get a different random shuffle next time and have mm-hmm. new event cards crop up that you didn't see before. There's also, this is again, a piece where I borrowed from The Quiet Year, the end card can show up very early or very late in the final season of the game. And that I found changes the feeling a lot, right? Like it can either be very abrupt, like, oh, we're marching off for our rights. We're going to go do this. And then boom, it's done. You can have a more protracted, drawn out realization that this is not going to go how you wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. And it's done. And that can also be a very different experience.
Very cool. So there are there's event cards.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the prompt cards will explain some type of issue that's going on in your community or a new problem that's arisen. You know, there was a cave-in in the mine, or there is an outbreak of influenza in the town. How do you take care of each other through that?
I really like that question. How do you take care of each other? Are there any mechanics surrounding that, or is that free narrative for the players to really discuss and decide?
It's very much free narrative for the players to decide how they want to do that and how their characters are able to do that. You know, I've had, because it's not a game that I don't want people to be super concerned about historical accuracy, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want people to be like, oh, let me Google what the price of potatoes was in 1921.
Right.
What's important in that moment is that you cannot afford it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it comes down to, you get some groups who will be like, okay, well, we will set up a boarding house for the families of the miners who were killed. And other groups will say, we don't have anywhere to put them. They're going to have to sleep on mats on everyone else's living room floors.
Mm-hmm. After a scene, or your characters are framed to really be able to have that. How did you feel about the play tests? Like, what did it bring to light for you?
Yeah. So initially the game started, it was really kind of a straight up hack of other games. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the playtesting was less about, you know, does this mechanic work? It was more about, is this evoking the emotions that I want it to? Or is this giving players the experience that I am hoping that they will have? It was, for me, there was very little, like, it's not a dice-based game. I don't have to do any math, which is good, because I don't want to do math.
Me either.
So a lot of the playtesting actually came down more to the order that information is presented, or mm-hmm. specific wording even, what concepts need to be explained to players. You know, we can talk about things like the mining company has hired scabs to break your picket line. You also have to accept then that not everyone is going to necessarily know what that means going into the game, and you have to define that for people.
Right.
Which was also a really great experience, just getting everyone up to, this is where people don't falter over themselves being like, oh, I don't know what this is. So once you start hitting that stride, once we got there in playtests, that was a really good moment for me.
Yeah, I bet. So that you felt like you would hit this point in design where you could accurately communicate like how people needed to play this game so that they could tell the story they wanted to tell.
Yeah.
That is such a sweet spot in design, isn't it? It's is this the first game? I probably should have asked this earlier, but is this the first game that you've ever designed, or have you designed other games?
I've got a few other small games out there. I did Only One Bed, a compilation of fanfic themed RPGs. They're all like little mini games. I've done some journaling games, especially mm-hmm. in the past year, because that's been such a huge space that's emerging in a great way.
Yeah.
For sad reasons, but great games.
Yes, exactly.
But I have been working on The Price of Coal since, it must have been, yeah, it would have been March 2018. So it's been over 3 years now.
some games take that long, whether it's getting that, like trying to find exactly the feel that you want, because I'm like you, and I'm sure a lot of designers are like this, but I'm like you where I'm all about how I want people to feel when they play the game. And I try to build the mechanics around that while staying true to that, which it sounds like that's exactly what you did here.
And you know, some games that can come together super quickly, like with my little fanfic tropes games. It's like, okay, this is a very clear, specific thing to evoke. People are going to get it or they're not, right?
Right.
And it helps that that game has a very specific audience. Whereas with this one, when you're trying to evoke something so complex, and when you're trying to evoke empathy for people who lived 100 years ago, who may not think you have anything in common with, but you actually have everything in common with these people, that took a lot more work.
I have two questions in my head I want to ask at the same time. I'm going to go back briefly to playing two characters. Yeah. I think that's a very cool and interesting concept. What gave you the idea to have each player play two characters? I guess, what are you hoping to like invoke in them by having them play two characters?
Sure. So that was actually something that came out of a game that I mentioned briefly earlier in passing, Heaven's Collapse, which is, it's another card-based historical game about a very lightly like fantasy reskinned version of the Siege of Nanjing. It's a very heavy game.
Yeah.
I highly recommend playing it. But again, it's a very heavy game for obvious reasons. But in that game, everyone plays two characters in part because there are moments throughout the game where your characters can die. And so having two characters means you don't just get suddenly kicked out of the game from just a practical perspective. This game does not have that. The Price of Coal does not kill anybody off unless you really want to kill off your characters mid-game. But it, for me, early in playtesting, I found that there were some scenes where it makes sense, like, okay, everyone, let's have all of the miners huddle up, or let's have all of the wives and mothers and daughters huddle up. And you don't necessarily want any player to be excluded from those, as well as the fact that getting those multiple perspectives can be very cool. You know, you might have the hothead miner who's ready to charge in there and, you know, throw down with the mine manager and fight, literally fist fight for what he wants. And you might have his much cooler headed wife who says, hey, don't you dare do that because you will get yourself killed.
Right. Are they always playing a couple?
No. So okay. It's actually specifically you're playing a miner and someone else's relative, like the same thing would not have both John and Sarah typically. There are some pairs that are romantic couples, husband, wife, things like that. There are some that are parent and child.
Okay.
There are some that are siblings, because ultimately all of those different kinds of family relationships can hit in very different ways. The coal miner whose brother is the sheriff might have a very different outlook than the coal miner who is an immigrant taking care of his young daughter. And as well, the sheriff and the daughter are very likely to have different perspectives as well.
True. That's right. You did say that in the beginning about, you play a coal miner and then a family member. So apologies that I thought it was, I was actually thinking how interesting it would be to play both partners. Right. But then as you explained it, I think it's, it just opens the doors up for so many more relationships when you have brothers and sisters or like child and parent, especially child and parent. That's a big one too.
I feel like that's kind of a space that a lot of games don't get into. And I feel like maybe more should.
Agreed.
Because again, that's something that is so universal. But families in different age categories are often not represented in games. But I think you can do a lot of really interesting storytelling with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, there's more games out there that deal with family dynamics, but one of the only ones I'm familiar with is Jingxi Blood in the Banquet Hall. You're not playing two characters, but you do play a family, and it's usually three different generations. And then you deal with running a restaurant and hopping vampires. So, you know, very different than your game, but I really like that you also brought in the family dynamics, because having played a game that focuses on that, I can see where the heart of your game is. And it's very cool to play a family dynamic game. It's very fun.
Ready for a rules light, narrative failing forward, collaborative storytelling tabletop role-playing game?
Unsure of where to start?
Powered by the Players is an actual play podcast featuring mini campaigns and one-shots of all your favorite Powered by the Apocalypse games.
Each campaign or one-shot will be a different PBTA game with a rotating cast of diverse players. We've got Masks, a teenage superhero drama.
Bluebeard's Bride, a feminist horror retelling.
Monster of the Week, a supernatural mystery.
Escape from Dino Island, a Jurassic Park-inspired adventure.
Crossroads Carnival, a Depression-era sideshow noir.
The next game we play could be yours. So join Morgan, Kristen, and Diana.
And let's power up.
Follow us on Twitter at PBTPlayers.
Subscribe on your favorite podcatcher.
So it is through Unicorn Motorcycle Games, which is Cam White and Kate Bullock. Who they have been my earliest supporters on this game. After that breakout where I first got the idea was where I first met Camden. And he actually reached out after the con and sent a very sweet message just being like, hey, I love the game idea you told me about. I believe in you. Let me know if there's any support that you need. And our friendship really grew from there. So that was very, very cool.
That's great. So I'm sorry, what is the name of the company again?
Unicorn Motorcycle Games.
I'm sorry, it was too cool. I had to
write
it down. Run by Kate and, is it Camden? I know you mentioned a con. Is that where you first met Kate and Camden?
Yeah, so I had met Kate at an earlier convention and she invited me to break out because she has been running that con for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Or I believe she was just the guest coordinator possibly, but she facilitated the con.
Yeah.
And then I met Camden there by complete happenstance.
Oh.
I ran into a friend who was like, oh, hey, I'm about to get lunch with some folks. Do you want to join us? And I was like, yeah, sure, I could eat. Convention magic, right?
It's exactly how it works. It's true. Speaking of conventions, have you play tested this at conventions or online play test?
It's been a mix. Actually, the first, in retrospect, I cannot believe I did this, but the first ever playtest of this game was at a con.
Wow.
And I look back and I'm like, what was I thinking? Mm-hmm. But it was my local convention, which is run by a group of my friends, and all of the playtesters in it were people who I already knew.
Oh, good.
And it was a great experience. So it's been run at a couple of conventions. And then of course, with everything this past year, we moved online, which is also great because it's opened up a lot of people who I wouldn't normally get to play with, you know, who I would never see in person. So.
Right. Yeah. I have to say that has been one cool thing that has come out of the last year where we all have played games online way more probably than we were previously, as you do get to meet different people and game with people that you wouldn't have before. So I'm sure that got you a wider playtest audience, which is actually perfect.
Yeah, it was great. And there were some people who I had never played games with at all. Mm-hmm. We had just met in Discord and were chatting, or there were some people who I loved gaming with at conventions, but we live on opposite sides of the country. So
let's talk a little bit about the Kickstarter, whatever you can share. I know that it comes out in August. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. So we're going to launch hopefully the first week of August. Mm-hmm. We picked that schedule partially because the centennial of the actual battle is at the end of August this year.
Oh.
I actually, all the way back in 2018, I was like, it'd be really cool to launch this game around the centennial. So a lot of the stuff has been driving towards that date for a very long time. And so we are still a little bit in flux in terms of like backer levels and things like that.
Sure.
But we've started working with our artist, Jacqueline Florencio. She is incredible. This is the first game I've ever had where we've been able to like hire an artist and get actual custom art done. And it's just the most exciting thing in the world, right? We got some character sketches last week and I was like, mind blown. I was like, how did she do this? How did she go into my head and figure out what they looked like?
Oh, that's perfect. That's so exciting. Are you sharing any of that art as like as a teaser, or is that all going to come out like on the Kickstarter?
I think we're putting together some shiny graphics and stuff like that to make it very real and promotional. But yeah, getting like the initial cover sketches for the box art for the game was one of the first moments where for me, I was like, wow, this is really real. This is really cool, and we're really going to do it.
Yeah.
That was a very cool moment for me.
That's such an exciting moment when like everything you've been working on so hard is becoming a little bit more of a reality. So I know that when we're talking, it's, we're still a little ways out from August. So you're still working on backer levels, which is understandable. And lots of people want to keep that stuff secret anyway. So I'm not pressuring you, Jen. Have you thought about having an online option, or is this going to be solely a physical game?
Yeah. So we are actually looking at sort of two online options, because one is doing it through, a virtual tabletop system. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many great emulators nowadays, from Roll20 to Tabletop Simulator, Astral, all of them. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the very simple option of the print and play cards, where you can, if you have a printer or can go to a print shop, you can just cut out the cards yourself. For the physical edition, we are looking at sort of deluxe premium components. Mm-hmm. I was very set on having like really high quality card quality as well as the box, because I'm very finicky about those things with other games.
Sure.
So I know exactly what I want. But understandably that changes the price point, of course.
So of course,
having accessible online options is very important.
I like that. And I know it's not possible for all games, which is why I asked, but I love the idea of being able to play online. Because I think a lot of us, even after we go back to some sense of normalcy, or at least where we can safely game in person again, that there's still people, like some of my very close friends aren't in the same time zone as me. Exactly. So there's still games I'm going to want to play with them, even though I can see people in person. So I love that there's going to be an online option.
Yeah. And I actually can't wait for it to be built, because what I've been doing is such a goofy thing through online playtesting. I set up my Zoom whiteboard and draw a little fake table so we can all imagine where we're sitting. Like for me, having that visual aid is so important.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I don't have to do this anymore.
That's we can just have
that set up online.
Exactly. Exactly. Is this the first game that you've had published by a company versus self-published?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And some of that was specifically me holding out. I'm very stubborn. And I was like, okay, I am going to self-publish this myself. I'm going to do everything myself, A to Z. But for the price of coal, for me, so much of this game comes down to wanting to do justice to it.
Sure.
Is recognizing my own limitations, right?
Which we all have.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I am no artist. I am no graphic designer. I can do very limited amounts of editing, but editing your own work is always, iffy. Yeah. So going through a publisher with this one really enabled me to bring the game's quality to what I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like a great partnership. It sounds like Kate and Camden at Unicorn Motorcycle Games, which I just love that name. I'm just going to keep saying it. It sounds like they've been very supportive, which is what we all want in a publisher, right? So it sounds like a great business relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not have asked for better partners for this. And actually, I originally ran it for them without the intent necessarily of publishing. Right. Them.
Yeah.
There's my friends who I was like, hey guys, I haven't run a playtest of this in a while. Would you like to help me playtest this?
Yeah.
And afterwards, they reached out like, hey, we'd like to help you make this a real thing.
Yeah.
Which was very, very cool.
Yeah. How did that feel? Because I think that when you pitch a game to a publisher and it's accepted, obviously there's a lot of pride, as there should be, because good job, right? But when you're not even necessarily pitching it, and then they just believe in the game so much, that must have been very exciting.
Extremely. Of course, this was during this whole past year of quarantines.
Sure.
So I like got the Facebook message, and I like had to like set my phone down and run around a little bit. But yeah, it was definitely a moment of like, oh, wow, that was like an audition I didn't know I was having.
Right.
Because I've always been terrified of the idea of pitching to publishers, right? Like I've done it and it's, you do it and you get through it, whether you yep. get accepted or rejected. But no matter what, it's always nerve-wracking. Having it be just during that first game where I could say, okay, I'm not auditioning for anything. This is not a pitch. This is just me playing a game with my very dear friends. I think made it probably go better.
Right. I think you probably unintentionally gave listeners a really good piece of advice in that if you're pitching a game to a publisher, act like you're just playing with some very good friends.
Absolutely. 100%. Just pretend like they're your friends who are here to support you and who will, you know, still like you, even if the game sucks.
I love that. So tell me how the events of the Price of Coal might still be relevant today in modern times.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very easy to fall into this mindset like, oh, this was 100 years ago. It doesn't right. matter anymore. When really you look at the situations that these people were in, and it's impossible not to see the echoes in modern times. Mm-hmm. These are people who they couldn't see a doctor because the company controlled access to that. They didn't own their homes and the company could have them evicted at any time. These were people living in incredibly precarious and working in very precarious and dangerous situations where the company prioritized profit over safety. Mm-hmm. Stop me if it sounds familiar. Even one of my recent players had brought up something that even I hadn't really thought about. The game is set in 1921. It's only 3 years after the Spanish flu.
I hadn't thought of that either. That's absolutely correct.
Exactly. There's a card in the game where, you know, some people in the town have gotten influenza. How do you right. take care of them when you can't afford to see the doctor? And my player, God help him, he literally asked me like, hey, this is only 3 years after the Spanish flu. Would we think to wear our bandanas over our noses and mouths to stop the spread? I'm like, yeah, you absolutely would.
Yeah.
I hate that this is relevant, but it absolutely is.
Wow.
And something I've said all throughout making the game was, I wish this wasn't relevant.
Sure.
But here we are.
Sure. Do you think then that even though some of the tones are on the heavy side, because I think a lot of us can relate to and understand not being able to afford homes mm-hmm. and not being able to afford healthcare. So even though the tones are heavy, do you think that it helps bring awareness not only to the historical event, which is extremely important, but also to what's happening to us currently?
Absolutely. What I hope the game brings to people is the idea that yes, these situations are bad, and yes, we find ourselves in them again, but we can still fight back against them. Mm-hmm. We can still find ways to empower ourselves in our community, and we can still find ways to take care of each other. And ultimately, while the game is dark, absolutely, and heavier in tone, I also want people to feel hope throughout mm-hmm. it. Where you can say, yes, these horrible things are happening, but we have each other and we will continue to take care of each other because that's what actually matters. You know, this is a game about people taking care of each other.
I think that taking care of each other is a good place for us to wrap up. So Jen, thank you so much for your time today. Can you tell listeners again just about the Kickstarter? Because I want to make sure no one misses it, and then where folks can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Kickstarter is going to launch the first week of August, most likely August 3rd or 4th. Going to run for 3 weeks, so get it while it's hot. and then we are hoping to fulfill very shortly thereafter. And you can follow me on Twitter at JenKatWrites, JenKatWrites.
Hey, Amber here. I would like to thank you so much for listening to Tabletop Babble, Tabletop Crowd, and Tabletop Spotlight, all the tabletop things that we have going on here lately. For show news, announcements, updates, and all that jazz, you can follow us on Twitter at Tabletop Babble. Also, it would be really, really helpful if you left us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help the show out a lot. Anyway, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.